It's season two of Retrain Your Brain with me, chartered psychologist Dr. Audrey Tang. I'm helping you reflect on your perceptions, reframe your approach, and rewrite your future, whatever your past. And this season is all about the self, so let's talk about you. Today I'm going to look at self-compassion. Picking up after things go wrong isn't easy, and that's why we need a sense of self-compassion. Learning to be kind to ourselves, to speak kindly, to speak helpfully, to speak supportively rather than critically. Maybe you can spend a moment thinking about your own inner voice. Is it one that says, "Oh, you're so stupid. Why did that happen again?" And it refers to you in a very aggressive manner. Take it into a different context. If this were a manager speaking to you, would you want to do better for that person? So why on earth do we think that by criticising ourselves, we're going to be motivated to do better next time? Self-compassion shouldn't be confused with self-esteem. Dr. Kristin Neff wrote a wonderful piece, and in summary, she says the difference here is, while there are similar benefits of self-compassion and self-esteem, such as greater happiness, better management of depression, and so on, self-compassion is better correlated with feelings of self-worth. She goes on, self-compassion is a way we relate to ourselves rather than it being based on comparison with others or on what we achieve. It's more stable. So when things don't go so well for us, we know that we are still okay. Self-compassion focuses on our worth as humans, not when we are special or recognized or above average in skills or talent. So, rather than focusing on building self-esteem, in this podcast, I want to challenge you instead to nurture your self-compassion. Try this. Reassure yourself through self-compassion statements rather than self-esteem ones. So, for example, if something doesn't go your way or you've said or done something you regret, when you reflect, try, "Well, I'm still proud of X, whatever it might be, because I worked hard on it, I contributed, I pushed my boundaries," instead of, "Well, I still did that better than somebody else." Or try, "I'm sad that I lost my temper, but I realise what triggered me and I can watch for that sort of thing in the future," instead of, "I'm sad I lost my temper, but you provoked me." There's a very subtle difference, but self-compassion focuses on you and your response. It's much more empowering compared with self-esteem, which focuses on praise and even acceptance, but it's always in the context of comparison with someone else or needing somebody else's validation. If you've ever been told, "You don't need to convince me," as you keep telling someone who can probably already see it, what you've done, then you may well benefit from a bit of self-compassion reframing. Why not try out some compassion-focused therapy? Now, this particular type of therapy is interventions that ask you to reflect on how you manage threat. And there are two ways we do this. One is soothing and the other is driving. Now, soothing behaviours include things like relaxation, going for a walk, meditation, massage, and you may engage with those better than perhaps the driven ones. Now, I'm a driven person, so I'm energised better and it makes me feel better when I do something along these lines. I improve my learning by reading something that stimulates me, or perhaps I spend time with friends in engaging discussion. Do what works for you. And don't forget, you're doing it for you. You don't need approval nor praise for it. And don't let other people tell you, "Oh, just relax." Because if you're not the type of person who likes the soothing types of self-compassion, then simply do what works for you. I prefer to be driven, and that's what I do. Recognize when you engage in informal self-compassion. In other words, doing things that make you feel good for you. And this can be little things like having a tea break when you need it and really enjoying that time to sit and think. Certainly, it's taking a toilet break when you need it. But that whole act of actually changing the scenery, or at least moving away from the place that you've been working, also does well to reset our minds. It's a little bit more refreshing. Simply changing positions or changing locations when you have writer's block can get those creative juices flowing again. Doing a mindless task after heavy concentration can also even be helpful. It's a little bit like the palate cleanser. So, for example, if maybe you've done a heavy piece of work and then you engage in a little bit of DIY, nothing that takes a lot of concentration, but maybe painting the middle of the room rather than the edges, that not only can be quite therapeutic, but it also contributes to making your living space a little bit nicer. Consider also reframing the times where you felt unloved. Now, this is never an excuse for abuse or neglect, but if you can begin to see the behaviours of your parent or your caregiver that you felt were hurtful as ways of them simply doing the best they could with whatever they had, with whatever they themselves had learned, hopefully you'll be able to let go of some resentment. Now, I'm not saying you need to forget, but by forgiving or at least letting go of that anger, we're able to channel some of that energy into something that's going to make our lives more positive. The whole thing about our past and what we remember is that it can begin to cloud how we think about ourselves and how we behave towards ourselves. But it's quite important to remember that sometimes what we experienced isn't necessarily our fault. And on that, try and remember that if somebody shows you compassion, if somebody shows you kindness, they may not be doing it for any other reason than simply they're saying you're worth it. Despite having done years of work on my own personal development and teaching and writing and speaking, it always interests me when I get one of those moments where I thought that I'd sorted something and I hadn't quite. And recently, I experienced the following. I have a very, very dear friend of mine writing the foreword for my next book, and he included an anecdote about our first meeting. Now, this is something that I hold extremely important and in many ways completely life-changing for me. But immediately, I thought it would be something that my editor wouldn't like because, in my reasoning, well, I'm not that important and who really wants to know anything personal about me unrelated to my credentials? I told this to my husband and he said, well, let your editor decide that. When I read a foreword, it is often because I want to know about the writer. Having let my editor see it, that paragraph remains intact. Over the last few years, I thought I'd been able to get a handle on my own feelings of low self-esteem and perhaps that low self-compassion and the sense of imposter syndrome. And to be fair, on the whole, I'm probably no longer seeking so much validation and I certainly apologise for myself a lot less. So it surprised me. And it surprised me then to consider that my friend would include it, but also that my editor would keep it. And even more, that I doubted both. But then suddenly, when I thought about it again, it made me feel really nice. It wasn't a feeling of, oh, I must be so amazing, and that's why my editor's keeping it in my book. It wasn't an ego boost. It was a feeling of warmth, of acceptance, of recognition that someone I value so greatly values me in the same way, and gratitude that I have such people in my life. That's what self-compassion is. It's positivity in a much warmer way than applause or achievement. And that's all we have time for. Remember, even the most effective thinking is nothing without positive action. Don't be the most enlightened person who never lived. For more practical support, check out my psychology and coaching masterclasses presented with Sharon Lawton on the Wellness League YouTube channel. Don't just wish for success, go out and grab it.